Can you just verbalize the questions that you like to pose to the faculty?
Sure. I wonder what use the MuggaScan is in helping us decide who's going to get into trouble with the drugs that we use as a pretreatment predictive test in asymptomatic patients.
Could we just start with that one? And how often does this acute decompensation occur, Dennis? How often have you seen that?
It occurs in patients who have pulmonary disease. That's where it was first described. You don't see it in patients who have a high metastatic burden outside the lung that I've ever seen. So we've treated patients who have, you know, 60% replacement of the liver and not seen any problems. But if they even have a little bit of lung involvement that's diffuse, meaning multiple nodules in different places, even small ones, it appears that we can get this acute reaction of dyspneon exertion. And we think it may be due to, you know, an on-target effect of the drug. So it's been described, and if you look at the early literature in the Herceptin trials, that was one of the things that were coming out of the medical alerts saying, watch out for an acute pulmonary decompensation, almost exclusively in patients who have pulmonary disease.
But she had cardiac decompensation. I mean, she had a dilated four-chamber.
Right, I understand that part of it. But did she have dilated four-chamber, especially four-chamber, given the fact that she got some significant process going on in her lung that was exacerbated when the Herceptin was put on board? In other words,
she was in remission. When she got,
because
she got six cycles of Adria, which I wouldn't do now. I would not have given that much Adriamycin, and I wouldn't have followed it as quickly, I think, with Herceptin.
Could I just backtrack, though, to the pulmonary thing? What's going on there?
No one knows.
No.
I never heard of that.
It's reported in the
early literature. So you have pulmonary mets, you give Herceptin, and what happens?
There's an acute respiratory syndrome that occurs within 24 to 72 hours, 96 hours. We've seen it out that late. After the infusion, you know, this drug is a remarkably safe drug. We could give it, and we really saw nothing. So when we see anything like this, it really caught our attention.
So what's going on?
The thought is you're getting an acute effect on the tumor cells in the lung and getting an inflammatory response around that. And
these people usually respond?
Oh, yeah, they respond. We've treated a couple patients through this. They've gotten better, and one of our longest living survivors is a woman who had this problem who came in with diffuse. Actually, this patient that I'm talking about had lymphangitic spread in the lung and was symptomatic at rest and went through a really bad several-day period with the Herceptin, but we just stayed the course. Because the flip side of the coin that I think you can feel justified about is metastatic HER2-positive breast cancer. The outcome data there is, this is an adjuvant setting, so the outcome data there are pretty certain in that patients, especially with patients who have their pulmonary disease or liver disease, are going to succumb without Herceptin fairly quickly. Within 36 months, usually.
I wasn't familiar with the data about pulmonary disease, but it calls to mind another lady that I had who was on an antibody for asthma and started with lymphangitic spread from breast cancer, and I started her on Herceptin and Taxol. And she was very anxious, and she had what I thought was an anxiety reaction initially in the clinic. We stopped her infusion. She hadn't used her inhalers that day. She went home. She came back a week later. She seemed fine. We gave her another round of treatment. She was so dyspneic, and we immediately stopped it. And I drove her to her car so she wouldn't have to walk that distance. And she was admitted a week later and went into progressive respiratory failure and died on her ventilator. And I was very puzzled by that. And I wondered if there was an interaction between, I don't recall the name of the drug, it's an antibody now used for asthma, and whether there was any relationship to the drug.
Was the tumor getting worse or better?
Well, she developed ARDS, basically.
So you couldn't tell.
So maybe
she had what you were talking about.
She didn't have a lung biopsy.
Maybe she was responding in because of that. So I think you have to, as long as the patient's aware of what the issue is, you got to pull the plug and hope for the best, because her pulmonary HER2-positive metastatic breast cancer would kill her in short order.
So, but in this situation, she's already in CR, so at least, you know.
She didn't have volume disease.
Grossly, she didn't have disease. She has acute heart failure, it sounds like, after getting one dose of Herceptin.
Mm-hmm.
You seen that, Dennis?
No.
Hal?
I haven't seen that. The timing would also be consistent, though it's sort of coincidental that it was right after the trastuzumab and the paclitaxel, but it would not be inconsistent with anthracycline-induced cardiomyopathy, which usually is in the first 4 to 12 weeks after, I don't know the exact numbers, but, you know, months after the anthracycline exposure. But it looks like you've proven Koch's postulates here. You give something and it causes it, and you take it away and it gets better, and you give it again and it causes it again. And so I think it sounds like this woman has done very well with associated cardiomyopathy.
With nalbuphine alone, which makes me wonder if she's had some long-term protection from the Herceptin we've managed to squeeze in.
Well, remember when you give a dose of Herceptin at the doses we're talking about, the sort of unappreciated fact about trastuzumab is, how did we pick the dose that we picked? The preclinical data, both in vitro and in vivo, showed that we needed to maintain a trastuzumab level of 10 micrograms per mil to get optimum inhibition. The clinical trials were designed to achieve a blood level of minimum 25 micrograms per mil. So 2 times or 2.5 times what we needed. Then if you give it, that's not the case in this patient, if you give it, and the half-life is longer than we thought it was going to be. We initially thought the half-life was going to be between 7 and perhaps 12 days. The half-life is closer to probably 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. So the patient had exposure to therapeutic levels of trastuzumab for probably 6 weeks or longer. And the peak effects that are associated with her symptoms probably dissipated because that went down, but you still had therapeutic trastuzumab on board. And then if you gave navalbine during that period of time, whatever interaction, I think we had preclinical data that showed that it looked like a good regimen, and Hal and his colleagues showed that it's a good regimen clinically. So you may have gotten a benefit there. It sounds like the patient's done remarkably well for that type of disease. Mm-hmm. You would have expected her to progress much more rapidly using conventional therapies. So it would be interesting to see what you have to do if you're challenged with the disease coming up again.
I'm sure we will be. And lately I've been thinking that she's probably about to break through. She has some very small pulmonary nodules that we can see, and one looks more dense, whatever that means. So I was preparing to have to make a change, and I was wondering about lapatinib and whether it would be possible to use it or advisable to use it. I don't know that she's going to meet the criteria for a trial.
I don't think she'll meet the criterion. If the drug's not approved, unless you can get compassionate use, you're sort of stuck.
I mean, assuming you could, will you use it?
Will it exclude cardiac disease? Is that, I mean, has it been tried in patients with
not to my knowledge.
Problems? So all of the Herceptin failures were failures due to progression of disease rather than inability to get Herceptin?
No, that trial was inability to get Herceptin. That was allowed in terms of the Xeloda trial in patients intolerant of Herceptin. But there were very few of those patients, and I think some of them were the acute infusional reactions that were repeatable. That's very rare. You don't see it often.
Yeah.
But there are patients that every time you infuse it, you get a problem.
The current lapatinib Xeloda trial, you have to have a normal ejection fraction.
Yeah, that's going to be the issue, I think, in terms of putting her onto a study, is for the most part, they continue to require normal LVEF.
I would try one more time.
With Herceptin?
Yeah, it'd be a nail biter, but I'd probably try it because you know what's going to happen with the disease if you don't get control of it.
Do you think you can skip the loading dose in this situation?
Sure, I would.
Yeah.
I would.